Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Hi everyone, my name is Ivan and I'm the new CEO of Small Caps. Last week we ran our first ever webinar and as always, with new technology, we had some glitches and anyway, we had to go and re-record. So luckily today, we've got our guests to go and rejoin us to go on and re-record this. By popular request, we're going to be talking about one very specific conversation. The only difference is that I'm replacing last week's host, James Whelan, who's currently, and I need to say this right, and Alex, maybe you'll be able to help me with this, is it Canada? Anyway, we're back joined by our fan favorite, Alexander Scanlon, Managing Director and CEO of Barton Gold. Thank you for joining us and all the way from New York. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you. A little bit jet lagged, but all right.
When did you land? Just recently?
Last night around midnight.
There you go. Yep, you would be jet lagged. So we're going to get the truth, the absolute truth. For those of you that don't know Barton, they've been on an absolute tear. Ticker code ASX-BGD. Barton is advancing a pipeline of gold projects in South Australia, including a large JORC resource base and key infrastructure that significantly reduces development hurdles. Alexander has done an absolutely remarkable job at Barton, unlocking long-term value from its existing assets. And today we're going to get a bit of an update on some of your new milestones and very recent milestones and some of your growth outlook. So, Alex, I think thank you for joining us, but obviously you want to go on and sort of share a little bit of your updates in slide form. So do you want to maybe go through that? And then we've got a couple of questions that I'm going to, ask again from last week. So apologies about that.
I'll bring up an abbreviated version of our presentation. So this has been updated to reflect a number of our more recent updates.
Amazing.
So for those who are not aware of Barton's broader profile, we are sort of the leading gold developer in South Australia. So we're a pure play gold, pure play South Australian developer. We have consolidated all of the major historical exploration and production assets in the Central Gawler Craton. Obviously, it's a very interesting domain. On the east side of the Central Gawler Craton, you have the IOCG province, which has been consolidated by BHP Billiton. Now, on the west side of the Central Gawler Craton, that same basin goes from being sort of deep and coppery to shallow and goldy as it trends to the surface, and that's what we've consolidated. We also acquired the only gold mill in the region about 5 years ago, and the idea was to step back, build up a much larger platform so that we could then transition into operations using that mill to start operations targeting 30 or 35,000 ounces per annum, but for that to then be a stepping stone to a much larger target. And that much larger target is our Tunkillia project. That's a project that we've grown from about 500,000 ounces to 1.6 million ounces. And we've demonstrated that it will be a very attractive 120,000 ounce per annum producer. So the idea is getting to that large scale destination by taking a lower cost pathway that we can start up and operate while taking Tunkillia through its development hurdles. Coming up for us, we are going to again be updating the resources around our Central Gawler Mill. We are going to be moving that straight to feasibility. We are targeting the start of operations by the end of 2026. And then in parallel, we are also accelerating Tunkillia on all fronts. Our study, which I'll take you through, has really come up with some excellent results. We are kicking off about 20 kilometers of upgrade drilling, 20,000 meters of upgrade drilling in the first round of drilling. That'll be followed by another 30,000 or so meters of RC and diamond drilling to finish the balance of the resource upgrades, to finish geomet, finish geotech. And then we've also had some interesting acquisitions. So we acquired the Wodonga Gold Project to the south of Tunkillia, which gives us a lot of optionality. And we've also just made a very interesting high-grade gold and silver discovery. So we're kind of plowing ahead on multiple different fronts. The idea is a dual platform sort of hub and spoke model where we can then develop high-grade blending feed around it. In terms of our capital structure, we have a very simple, very clean capital structure, about 225 million shares. Today, we have enterprise value of about $205 million. And the key thing about our share register really is that we have a strong consolidated share register composed primarily of board and management, and then institutional and high net wealth investors. But we also have very high liquidity. So the 20% of our share register, which is represented by retail shareholders, is about 3,000 to 4,000 shareholders. So with this, we have both high concentration, but also high liquidity. And we trade with the characteristics of a company that are much, much larger than a $200 million business. And one of the reasons we've had such strong consolidation of our shares into institutional hands is really just a strong, steady track record of both progress, but actually cost efficiency and low dilutions. Since we IPO'd in 2021, we've actually only raised about $13 million of new equity publicly, while generating about $12 million of additional non-dilutive cash internally. So we do this through our asset monetization programs, which includes selling scrap copper, scrap steel, but also producing and selling gold concentrates. Moving forward, this year is really about a commercialization focus as we go through the end of 2025 and into 2026. In terms of the capital structure, you really can't go past the human capital. This is the most important part of the capital structure. And within Barton, we have built a team that has collectively several hundred years of experience exploring for permitting financing, building and operating major mining assets with a particularly strong pedigree in gold and in South Australia. So with the exception of one non-executive director, the entire team, about 15 people, is based in Adelaide. We are where our projects are. And our team is comprised entirely of South Australian residents. So, South Australians born and raised, South Australians who have returned, and people who've become native South Australians over many, many, many years. So there's a very strong passion in our team, a very strong alignment to doing something major for South Australia and in South Australia. And this goes back to a little bit of the pedigree of the group in the gold space. About half of our leadership team come from Normandy Mining, which was the largest gold producer in the Southern Hemisphere until it was acquired by Newmont in 2002. So they were producing about 2.5 million ounces per annum. So we have a team that is designed to be operating a multi-billion dollar company, and we are basically building toward that in our development strategy. When we look at our platform on a map here, what we're really looking at doing is developing a dual platform hub and spoke model with our central Gawler mill located at our Challenger project, and then also the development of a new mill at Tunkillia. And the idea here is we want to establish a long-term dominant gold leadership position in the region. We have the majority of the gold resources. We have the only gold mill in the region. So since we're targeting Tunkillia as that large scale sort of anchor for institutional value, now we look at Challenger and we say, look, can we leverage our central Gawler mill and the couple hundred thousand ounces around that, take that into operations, make that transition from developer to producer, do that quickly, do that cheaply, do that with low dilution, start generating cash flow, and then expand, and we build Tunkillia. And then we build the second mill in the region. And now we've got a series of projects that are all within 200 kilometers of two plants that we own, and we start to look at building out our regional blending feed. Now, our Tarcoola project, which sits between our central Gawler mill and Tunkillia, has an existing open pit on it. We've also made a very interesting high-grade gold and silver discovery there. To the southeast of Tunkillia, we've also acquired the Wadena Gold Project, and that's about 280,000 ounces of gold that we could look at trucking up on existing main and back roads up to to either a new Tunkillia plant or even the central Gawler mill if we're thinking about producing a concentrate. Now, equally, as you can see, the Wadena project is also connected to three different ports within 200 kilometers. So we're building a platform here. We've got a very high degree of optionality between these assets and different forms of infrastructure, the ability to leverage our existing mill, the ability to maximally leverage a second Tunkillia mill, or to just go directly to port with concentrates. The purpose of all this and why we started with Tunkillia is to develop a bulk efficient scale producer of gold. We really want to develop the Capricorn Metals of South Australia. And we focus on their Karlawinda project as an analog for what we're doing, because it was sort of the inspiration for the Tunkillia project and our basis and scale. For those of you who may not know Capricorn, They developed the Karlawinda project from a similar stage to when we acquired Tunkillia. So they acquired that back in 2015 as a 650,000 ounce asset, grew it to 900,000 ounces and 1.1 and 1.3 and 1.5 million ounces. And then they focused on bulk, highly efficient open pit mining and processing. They've since grown that up to about 2.2 million ounces, but it's got a head grade or a resource grade of about 0.7 gram per ton. And a lot of people sort of reflexively think of that as low grade, but that project is today one of the lowest cost gold producers in Australia. So they're processing about 4.5 million tons per annum. They're producing 120,000 ounces per annum. And they're doing that for an all-in sustaining cost of less than $1,500 Australian. Now, we got very lucky when Capricorn was drilling the Karlawinda project during 2016, 2017, and 2018, because that's when we were doing our diligence on Tunkillia. And we saw some similarities in the early data there, namely around some shallow, higher grade zones that could quickly pay back capital. So we acquired Tunkillia at the beginning of 2020. Big pardon. We then grew it to 900,000 ounces and 1.1 and 1.3 and 1.5 and subsequently 1.6 million ounces. And we published a study demonstrating that it will actually outperform Karlawinda's results here in its first couple of years of operation. So it gives us that really strong destination. And we are now moving back to leverage our stage one assets to get to this point. When we look at our stage one assets here, what we're talking about is our Central Gawler Mill and the mineralization adjacent to it at the Challenger Gold Projects. We have a fully permitted mill on fully permitted mining leases. The mill was originally designed to be a 600,000 ton per annum throughput plant, assuming fresh ore, a very strong historic recoveries. And we've just upgraded resources next to the mill to include about 223,000 ounces of JORC resources. Now, that includes about 100,000 ounces of high-grade open pit and underground material on existing development. And it also includes higher-grade materials in our historical tailings facility. So what we are looking at is potentially a two-stage development here, or a two-phase development, where we say our stage one operations make a really low-cost, low-risk transition into processing high-grade historical tailings first, and then we animate the hard rock crushing and grinding side of the mill, and we start hard open pit and underground mining operations. We have actually just published an initial estimate for the reinstatement of that mill at $26 million Australian. It's very cheap, and we're now moving straight to full feasibility on this. So we're targeting production here by the end of 2026. And then we look at Tunkillia. So in parallel, we are advancing the Tunkillia project. So this is a study we released in May of this year, 2025. And we've called this our optimized scoping study. This is very close to a pre-feasibility level. We have actually gone and done a full mechanical equipment list, capital cost buildup, drive list, geometallurgical, geotechnical, crushing grind size, comminution circuit trade-off analyses. We've got water hydrology analyses. So for us, what we want to do is actually upgrade the resources and then be able to do some really detailed geometallurgical modeling throughout the block model for a production model. But basically, this is a very high confidence model. And what it will what it's shown us is that we can spend about $400 million to produce a 120,000 ounce per annum producer of gold, 250,000 ounces of silver at a competitive all-in sustaining cost of around $2,200 Australian per ounce life of mine. And when you look at the returns metrics here, it sort of looks like a standard medium to long-term gold producing asset, about $2.7 billion in cash flow from operations, $1.4 billion NPV. But where it gets really interesting is when you look at the equity IRR and the payback period. So the equity IRR is 73% on an unlevered basis. What that's telling us, of course, is that the initial return of capital is very large and very quick. And that is coming from some higher grade starter pits that sit right in the middle of this asset. When we look at those pits, and we've sort of broken this down into four pit stages for simplicity here, we have a central higher grade zone, which you can see outlined in yellow there, what we call our stage one starter pit. And that stage one starter pit pays back this entire development two times over in the first year. So if you look at the table in the bottom left corner, what we're looking at is 5 million ton per annum operation with an average head grade of about 0.82 grams. And that produces around 120,000 ounces per annum. But during the first 13 months of operations, at stage one starter pit is producing about 5.9 million ton of material at a head grade of about 1.2 grams. So it's about 45% higher. And what that means is for a given 5 million ton per annum effective throughput rate, you are not producing 120,000 ounces. You're producing around 180 to 190,000 ounces. So what it means is that your cost per your cash cost of production per ounce is not $2,200, but it's actually around $997, just under $1,000 Australian. So that stage one starter pit generates about 206,000 ounces of gold, 490,000 ounces of silver, and $825 million in free cash during the first 13 months. When you include the stage two pit there, now you're producing 365,000 ounces of gold, nearly a million ounces of silver, and $1.3 billion in cash in the first 2.5 years. So this project is paid back 2 to 3 times over in the first 1 to 2.5 years, which gives it a very, very strong financial profile. So we are now kicking off a drilling program to upgrade that stage one and stage two pit, all to indicated and some to measured. And then that's going to help us underwrite accelerated financing conversations while in parallel, we're targeting a PFS and mining lease application by the end of 2026. Just to the north at our Tarcoola project, we have also made a very interesting high-grade gold and silver discoveries. We published a new regional structural model here at Tarcoola in 2023. In 2024, we drilled it and we made a discovery of, if you can see my mouse here, my cursor, we discovered this new gold zone. So this was obviously very exciting, a strong validation of our regional structural modeling. We drilled it, we extended it, we drilled it, we extended it. We're getting a lot of shallow, high-grade gold. And we were thinking about how do we best model this because it's a complicated gold field. And we went back and we re-assayed everything for full multi-element analysis and got quite a surprise in that we had very high-grade silver with the gold. Now, traditionally in the gold field here at Tarcoola, you might see one part silver to, say, six parts gold. In this particular gold discovery, that was inverted. So we're getting gold of up to 300 grams, or sorry, silver of up to 300 grams with gold of up to 80 grams. We then stepped about 500 meters to the west and drilled a second structural target. And what we came back with was very interesting and very exciting. So we actually made a very high grade silver discovery. And our first hole returned a 17,600 gram silver intersection. So that was a 6 meters at 4,747 grams per ton from 46 meters depth. So 28,000 gram meters from 46 meters depth. And we have since now stepped out and drilled and followed this up. And what we've come up with is a broad footprint of very high grade silver and high grade gold mineralization that seems to be very silver dominant in the west side and then trend to gold dominant in the east side. So this is all very interesting. That discovery hole that we drilled in March was literally the fifth highest grade silver interval reported on all public exchanges in the first half of the year. So now what we're looking for is the source of this mineralization. And then we look down at our Wudinna project. This is a project we just acquired in July from Cobra Resources. And what we're looking at here is another large landholding. We've got four deposits with 279,000 ounces in them. Rail, near main roads, minor country roads that also connect up to Tunkillia. And this provides us a lot of optionality when we think about how do we continue to leverage our future infrastructure. We've got an asset here that has got, one, a base of mineralization that is open to extension along strike and to depth. We have a number of untested targets. The whole area is actually quite underexplored, but it gives us the opportunity to think about, hey, look, if we want to develop this, do we just produce a concentrate and either truck this up to Central Gawler Mill? Do we truck it to the future Tunkillia Mill? Or do we truck it to one of three ports that you can actually see here on this map? We have three ports within 200 kilometers of this project. So we could produce high, produce gold concentrates and then send them directly to port. So very, very high degree of optionality for us. And really for us, the next 18 months is really about commercialization, taking our central Golar mill to stage one operations. We'll be starting feasibility studies soon there. We are looking to do site works and commissioning in the second half of 2026 and get those initial operations running by the end of the year. And then Tunkillia in parallel, JORC reserve upgrade drilling, further geomet, further geotech drilling, further water drilling, kicking off full feasibility studies during 2026 and targeting a mining lease application by the end of that year. So it's been an extraordinarily busy period of time for us. We have a lot coming up. We'll have a number of updates with us. And as we get into 2026, we're going to be looking to start completing various of our financing and other project development agreements that allow us to essentially start a 15-year pathway of production and growth on these on this platform.
That's awesome. Thanks, Alex. And so there's a couple of questions that I know that I want to ask on the back of the presentation, as I actually didn't get to see it last week. The first thing, I remember you did an interview not so long ago with us, and you were talking about sort of that commercial balance between gold and silver. And obviously, you've spoken a fair bit about finding really high-quality silver as well as high-quality gold. How are you going to balance that up as you're heading into production? Because I did learn something new from that interview, and if you can just share that a little bit more in terms of the chemistry and et cetera.
Yeah, look, if I'll go back to our map and sort of we can speak about the theory of the infrastructure here, right? So we have—
That was my next question.
Sorry?
Well, my infrastructure was actually my next question, but yes.
Well, hopefully I won't step on that question too much. But if we think about balancing the focus on gold and silver, right? From a portfolio standpoint, what we have contained in this ground, everything we know, gold will represent the substantial majority of the economic output of these projects, simply because we have so much of it. The Challenger project is very, very high purity gold. It's about 95% gold and 5% silver in its doré. So the central Golar mill is naturally going to be focused on producing gold. Tunkillia, likewise, is a very gold-rich project in the sense that gold is about 97% of the revenues. But Tunkillia actually has about 2 ounces of silver for every 1 ounce of gold. So there's more silver coming out of Tunkillia, and the doré bars we'll produce there will actually be kind of like a gray material. It'll be mostly look like silver. And then when we think about, you know, the assets that we have that we can blend from, when you look at Tolmer, Tolmer has the potential to actually have a very significant silver credit. If we can find the source mineralization, if we can build that to scale, we're talking about mineralization that in one of the sort of horizons is running between 500 to 5,000 gram per ton silver with some high grade gold with it. And in that context, if that has scale, you might actually look at specifically producing a concentrate targeting that silver and processing that silver separately. And it could become a significant contributor to what we're doing. We'll have to wait and see if we can get to that source mineralization.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's sitting right on some rail there, which is nice because, you know, you see a lot of maps and, you know, it's in the middle of nowhere with no infrastructure around. Yeah. Who operates all the rail and the ports, and how much is that? I mean, if you know, how much is it going to impact your cost base? Because I hear that's an important element to consider when you're looking at these kind of projects.
It is. So, I mean, for us, I mean, we are lucky in that what we produce doesn't require rail, right? So, I mean, if we were to produce a concentrate from Tolmer, for example, what we would be producing would be a very high grade silver or gold or gold silver concentrate. And that's something that would possess so much value in such a small scale. You actually don't need to put that on a rail, and it's actually going to be such a small size that it would be almost too troublesome to put it on rail. You will actually truck that in concentrate containers and then send that to port. That's actually something that we've done. Some of our investors may recall that we've produced gold concentrates from our central Golar mill, and we literally just containerize those and put those in 20-foot containers and send them to international markets. So, but the advantage we have with that rail, of course, is, you know, that is the rail that crosses the continent of Australia, and it has the one the one turn on the rail that goes up to Darwin. So we are literally connected to everywhere. And if we want to bring in bulk materials, including energy, or take out bulk materials, including concentrates, that is a huge advantage for us.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Moving into financing, so as you're going to be going and upgrading these, I guess, ultimately to production, one can't go and say that there hasn't been, you know, a small amount of M&A. There's obviously a whole heap going on, especially this year. Considering how close you are, obviously you're speaking to, I'd suspect you're speaking to some strategics, either investors or financiers or, you know, people who want to have proper exposure to the corporate. How does that look over the next 6 to 12 months? And I mean, if you can comment on that.
Yeah, look, obviously as a company, we have now broken cover ourselves on M&A. So we acquired the Wood in the project. And it's the first time that we've stepped out away from our sort of core platform, because we look at what and we say, well, if we are going to build the Tunkillia mill, then we are automatically going to make Wadena much, much more valuable. So if you can literally deal to yourself inside of your own portfolio, that's a really smart investment. And as we look outward, we also find people looking inward. We've established a very dominant position in this region. We will have two mills here that essentially act as a regional hub and spoke model. We will essentially build up a new district scale development hub here. So naturally, we do know a lot of the larger strategic players. We do keep in touch with them. And that includes both, you know, people, you know, producing gold and silver, but of course, people financing projects like this. So the optimized scoping study obviously made quite clear to everyone the platform that would be emerging through Tunkillia. And now looking at Challenger and the Central Gawler Mill as sort of a stage one stepping stone to that platform, there are a number of different parties that are interested to look at working with us in terms of being project partners or financial partners to fund either or both of the Challenger stage one operation or Tunkillia stage two development.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the payback numbers on stage one, it's I could imagine there's not a shortage of people who'd want to go and have that conversation. And that was also your background as well. I mean, you were telling me in Noosa that the background of Barton started out essentially as from funding perspective, which is probably a good thing to have at the moment, considering, you know, where the world is with M&A, et cetera, right?
Yeah, look, you know, the approach to Barton was really a sort of long-term global macro investment strategy. And in simple terms, you know, without kind of going too deep in everything, we looked at global credits, global risk, geopolitical stability or instability. And we saw a world that we thought would be coming apart. So Barton Gold was actually born out of a sort of a private capital group that I was running called Park Capital Management, probably best described as a small multifamily office structure. And Barton Gold is actually a global macro strategy that we put together essentially as a deglobalization and monetary policy play. Now, we couldn't have predicted things like COVID. One could certainly have predicted Russia's invasion of the Ukraine, which has then led to a series of geopolitical decisions and actions, which really propelled and returned gold to the center of the financial universe in terms of being the new anchor or sort of a requisite anchor for de-dollarization. So we find ourselves now 8 years after starting the strategy, sort of right in the middle of what we thought would happen, which is, I guess it's nice to be right, but it's also, you know, it's quite unfortunate that we were right in some respects. But yeah, look, we're in a good place, literally and figuratively with these assets. And I think we are very, very well positioned to benefit as we sequentially turn these on over the coming 5 years.
Yeah, definitely. So basically, your story is you left North America, you ran away from everything going on there, and here you are in South Australia. Everything's explained.
Yeah, I ran away, so to speak, from North America a long time before you know, sort of current political discourse. Yeah. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, the thing to really look for, and obviously, everyone has very strong perspectives on the political discourse, right? But when you go back to 2016 and you look at the Brexit vote and the election of Donald Trump, you know, those are two things that everybody has a pretty strong opinion on. But your opinion, if you're trying to look at this from an investment standpoint, and sit back and figure out what does this mean for the world, your political view doesn't matter. What matters is the event. And the event or the events were the two leading Western liberal democracies who drove and funded and fueled post-World War II globalization, saying, enough, we're done, we're pulling back, enough of this globalization stuff. It was good for a while, but it's not good anymore. And when you see these types of things happening, these represent paradigm shifts, structural changes, structural dislocations. And this is where you're going to see a lot of volatility, a lot of opportunity. And so I think when I left the US, things were very kind of like steady state. It's probably the best time of the US. I left in 2005. So it was, everything's on the upswing. But, as it is now, right? I mean, we talk about fragmentation in global markets. We're also seeing fragmentation in the domestic US market. And that's going to continue to drive and accelerate, I think, the sort of global geopolitical reordering. And we're seeing this, you know, every day now with, China, India, Russia becoming a much tighter knit unit, and the US sort of pulling back and saying, look, we're going to kind of go inward now. So it's very interesting. We are living through the history. And I think in 10 to 15 years, we're all going to see a world that's very different than we anticipated 10 to 15 years ago.
Yeah, I think anybody who's following the AI change rapidly is probably going to definitely agree with that. Well, hope would agree with that. Anyway, look, I think we can talk for hours, and I think there's a couple of interesting going on themes on top of that that I want to discuss with you later down the track. But you do need to go and sleep and catch up on your jet lag and enjoy New York. Are you going to see the tennis while you're there?
I am not. No, just got meetings in the work, and then on to Colorado, the Beaver Creek Precious Metals Summit next week.
Nice. Yeah. Well, hopefully we see you back in Australia soon. Hopefully you don't get stuck in America. Anything could happen. Thank you so much for your time joining us in the middle of, almost in the middle of the evening for you now. Have a wonderful time, and we shall see you very soon.
Thank you very much.